This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm back with Susan this week. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. There's been a... It seems like the immigration stuff is...
Incessant.
...heavy on Trump's mind. Yeah. No, like, Trump is not giving up on this. This is his new NFL.
It is. Not that he's going to back down from the NFL stuff, but yeah, this is... But it's all kind of part of the same... I mean, like, the theme is similar, right? People of color, not... obeying orders. So yeah, there's a lot to talk about in terms of immigration, but you know, one of the things that tends to happen with this administration is like, you look at all the most outrageous stuff and other things fall through the cracks. There are a couple other stories that I do want to look at also. And just a heads up to our listeners, we actually will not be here next week, right? We're going to be skipping a week, 4th of July. Everybody enjoy your holiday. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And I'm sure, I can't even imagine, we're going to need like a 3-hour episode for like a 2-week update, but
we'll have peace with North Korea. That's in that.
Will we really? Because yeah, some shit went down in North Korea this week.
No,
too.
We will not.
So I want to start off by talking about some news that might not have caught folks' attention, but I think it's kind of significant, although not surprising. And that is this, that just this past week, our UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, and Secretary of State Pompeo held a presser in which they announced that the United States is no longer going to be part of the UN Human Rights Commission. The interesting thing is, like, in order to become, there's like 47 members who are part of this commission, and you got to be voted into the commission. I don't know how many countries voluntarily say that we don't want to be part of it, but America might be alone on that. Well, in her statement, she said, I want to make it crystal clear that this step is not a retreat from human rights commitments. Yeah, because that's the priority. On the contrary, we take this step because our commitment does not allow us to remain part of a hypocritical and self-serving organization that makes a mockery of human rights. Now, I mean, all throughout his campaign, Trump has lambasted the United Nations. He hates the UN. So, you know, I mean, and a year ago, Haley had kind of made a threat that, look, if... Well, interestingly enough, a year ago, the threat that she made on this particular commission was that if they didn't get rid of certain countries, China, Saudi Arabia, and I can't remember another one, and Venezuela, that the U.S. would withdraw. And also if they didn't lighten up on Israel, because there's a lot of resolutions that are decreed against Israel, human rights violations. Of course, they didn't do that. I wonder where they stand on the Saudi question now. But anyway, so we're not part of this organization anymore. And... yep. Thanks, Trump. But I will say this, though, a little bit about the commission. It's actually, it replaced in 2006 a previous commission called the Commission on Human Rights, which wasn't functioning well. And so in 2006, George W. Bush also actually declined to join in 2006 when this thing was organized. The Obama administration did join it. And, you know, what the council really does is they address their focus or their goal, I would say, is to kind of create standards of human rights on all kinds of issues with disability, freedom of expression, rights of women, LGBTQ issues, but create standards that are internationally agreed upon and nations are held to. But they can also actually hold tribunals and they can hold panel, you know, like impanel bodies to investigate human rights abuses and stuff. Mostly, in a lot of ways, they are kind of toothless, these like issue decrees and resolutions. But still, it's symbolic of nothing else.
It's not. It's more than that, though. This is how the multilateral system works. This is how we are trying to evolve international law and international systems. Whereas Trump wants to destroy everything multilateral, go back to a bilateral world.
Who is the bi? Who's on the other side of that bi? I'm just wondering.
He wants a million bilateral relationships. He wants a ton of one-on-ones all around the world. Each country operates its relationship with each country, other country, individually, and that's it. And it's great if you want a world that focuses on force and might is right and one that does not respect basic principles of like non-intervention and non-interference and, you know, not having international war all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is part of the American exceptionalism type of mentality where the idea is if you are in multilateral, you know, organizations and agreements, then it kind of levels a playing field in a way. And America should not have to play with certain people in the same way, and they should have more leverage. And in having just strictly bilateral relationships with every single country independently, America can leverage its power and influence on each of those nations individually.
It's a mafia viewpoint. What Trump is breaking it down into is that we could nuke you. So really, you have to go along with us or else you'll suffer consequences. But it's entirely wrong, too, because America's power in the current world system is not because we have nukes. Also, lots of countries have nukes. It's not because of the biggest military. I mean, it's part of that. But it's because we have led. I can't say lead anymore. But we had been leading a coalition of like-minded countries and developing countries and trying to bring into the umbrella other countries that maybe not totally evolved yet in human rights, but they're getting there. And that's where power comes from.
And that's not a concern. Yeah. That's not a concern for this administration. That is, you know, whether it's Egypt or Saudi Arabia or North Korea at this point, I mean, that's absolutely not a concern of this administration. In other words, they don't care about all ships rising. Like they're not interested in what they just want is American power, basically, to be supreme.
It's zero sum mentality on the international scale.
Yeah. I mean, what that's looking like right now is just a disintegration of all these relationships, including with allies. I mean, now we're at war with Canada, and then we've got these trade wars going on, which I don't know how all that's going to... I mean, I was just reading... I wasn't going to cover this, but I was reading how China, you know, has retaliated with their tariffs on soybeans, and these soybean farmers in America are like, oh my God, we're going to basically go broke. We're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars because of these tariffs. And many of these folks are in the heartland and were Trump supporters. And I don't know how that's going to look in a few years, but it's not a winning position for us to take.
He's going to blow up the economy and then all hell is going to come to pass. It's about our time.
He's blowing up all kinds of shit. Another piece of news was this, and this was actually really alarming to me. It didn't get a lot of play, but that this past week, the White House has proposed a massive reorganization of the government, like huge. Did you happen to catch that? I know you're really.
It reminds me of the whole thing when he's like, let's execute drug dealers. Like, it's so insane and so over the top that the first reaction is to just like hope that it's just him talking shit. Like Space Force. Are we actually going to have Space Force?
Oh yeah, I forgot about Space Force.
Is it actually going to happen? Is he actually going to reorganize the whole government? Is he actually going to do this stuff? Maybe, but maybe not. So maybe if you ignore him, it'll go away.
I don't feel like that's ever happened yet. Is there
anything
that's
happened at times? Like there's shit like it's come up and then he's like never actually done. Like firing Mueller. He told him to fire Mueller and they like didn't do it. And then he like forgot it for a while.
Yeah. That's because nobody's ignoring it.
You can delay him by forgetting it. You can delay him. I don't know if you can stop him. His mind's really set on it. But also, he is not the most comprehensive thinker. So I'm sure there's stuff that got delayed on and he just forgot.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. You know, this plan, and actually folks can Google it and read the entire plan. I think it's on the White House. It's like a whole PowerPoint presentation type of thing. Mick Mulvaney, who's the director of the White House Budget Office, is the one. It's kind of his brainchild. I don't know how important some of these things are to Trump, although I think a few of the reorganization points are probably really important to him. But a thing like Space Force, just by virtue of the name alone, I feel like he would make that happen. He needs his military parade and he needs a Space Force. He's like a big bloated child.
But we can't even afford to have joint military operations, training exercises in North Korea, so South Korea. So how can we afford a
Space Force?
Is
that an afford issue?
Yeah, it's an afford issue. That's what his excuse was, that it's really expensive to fly planes from Guam. Like, if it's too expensive to fly a plane from Guam, it is definitely too expensive to fly a plane to Mars.
Well, he says it's going to be a new branch of the military, so let's see who signs up for that. Finding a great bra that looks and feels beautiful and supports you perfectly is no easy task. That's because women come in so many sizes and shapes, and Third Love knows it. and they make their bras using thousands of real women's measurements. Third Love designs its bras with breast size and shape in mind so that they fit impeccably and are beautiful to boot, because the quality you find in every stitch, the details make all the difference, and they use premium fabrics and experts for their designs. Also, you can skip the trip to go get fitted, because y'all know how awkward that is. You can find your fit in 60 seconds online, order and try on at home. No more weird fitting room experiences. They've got this great fit finder quiz online. All you gotta do is answer a few simple questions and find your perfect fit. It's kind of fun and takes less than a minute. And Third Love guarantees a perfect fit. You can return and exchange completely free and easily. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everybody. So right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. All you gotta do is go to thirdlove.com/45th right now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today. A part of some of these, part of the proposal, a few things that stuck out to me, number one, was privatizing the post office. And, you know, the post office has seen better days. I will say this. The post office does need some help, has some serious competition. But I wonder if that's kind of a middle finger to Amazon. He's obsessed with that. He's obsessed with the post office and Amazon, and how he thinks.
But it's really a middle finger to his Amazon base, because there are competitive options for big cities. There are free market, you know, I mean, there are, if right. the post office stopped existing, us in DC will be fine. It's people who
will be okay.
Live in areas that it's not practical or financially viable to have 6 day a week mail service. They're the ones who are going to get screwed for it.
Yeah. And I'll be honest. I mean, like, I use some of the other services, but at the end of the day, post office is the most affordable service. It simply is. They're just as reliable. They're a fraction of the cost of a lot of the private shipping companies. Another thing they want to do is merge the education and labor departments. I don't know what the implication of that is so much, but it doesn't sound like a great idea. Although I think the thinking behind that is that he has spoken a number of times about providing work opportunities for folks who decide not to go to college. So maybe this is a combining that those two elements. I don't know.
This is probably why he chose DeVos. He's like, get the worst person possible for it. They'll be like, well, at least if we combine education and labor, we'll have to get rid of one of the cabinet heads, and it's definitely gonna be DeVos. So
wait, who's head of labor?
Acosta, I think. Acosta. I can't remember.
Okay. I feel like DeVos really does serve his agenda, so it might be Acosta who goes then. But
oh god, double secretary DeVos.
One of the moves that has a lot of folks alarmed here is that they want to completely reorganize safety net programs and into something called the Department of Health and Public Welfare. So, you know, first of all, there's inserting the word welfare into the title itself is kind of a signal, because, you know, it comes off as a bit of a pejorative, but also it will put certain programs like the SNAP program, which is like a supplemental nutritional assistance program. Many, many, many people, especially, I mean, even in Trump land, receive SNAP benefits, but put that also into like a welfare category. And I think it would just basically create less incentive to fund programming through a, if the government can say, well, these programs are in a, you know, under welfare versus under being part of Health and Human Services, which sounds like, oh yeah, we want to fund Health and Human Services, but I don't know if I really want to fund welfare so much. I think it's about those kinds of optics. Apparently, you know, Trump actually can't do a lot of this by executive order. There are certain moves he can make, but a lot of this will need a congressional approval. So we're counting on you, Congress.
They, you know, if he's got a few months left, hopefully, with a solid Republican lead in every chamber of government. But that's a lot of an agenda to try and tackle right now, unless you're pretty confident you're going to continue on after November. God willing, at least one branch will go to the Democrats, at which point I don't think he can do any of that.
You know, there were reports that came, I think, in the New York Times, did a piece this week talking about how Trump's base, in the face of him you know, I mean, things have been really, they have been great for him, actually, in the last couple of weeks. There has been a massive public outcry, massive resistance and pushback to the immigration stuff that's happening. But it is really firming up his base and is really firming. And there are plenty of still Republican governors who still back him and back his policies. And he's doing really well in GOP polls. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm hoping for the blue wave in November, but at this point, I just don't know anymore.
Yeah, no, nothing can be taken for granted. There will not be a red wave, as Trump decided to call it without really thinking it through. But that's not enough. Like, I mean, a red wave is not going to happen. But in like, it's a simple fact now in our current electoral system, for the Democrats to actually capitalize on any gains, to actually turn electoral wins into power in Congress, they have to win by quite a bit. So it's not enough to simply take, 50 plus one home. We'll see.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I also want to talk about something interesting that's happened in the last week. Like, literally in the span of, like, a week, like, these stories have come out. And that is this, that people in Trump's administration or, you know, high-level GOP people like Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi, they have been publicly booed or harassed out of spaces. So apparently Nielsen, who is the Secretary of Homeland Security, well, she's had kind of a shit couple weeks, and we'll talk about her in a minute, but she decided to make herself be able to feel better by going to a Mexican restaurant. Stephen Miller did the same thing. Now, what's interesting to me is...
Oh, it's staged.
What's that? You think it's staged?
Oh, it's absolutely staged. 100% staged. Well, zero question.
Well, with Miller, yeah. I don't know about with Nielsen, but they went to these Mexican restaurants.
She did not have to go to a restaurant alone. It was totally staged. Stephen Miller, probably no one wants to eat with him, so I'm sure that could have been legit, but it wasn't.
So they both went to restaurants. They got booed and harassed out. Then Sarah Sanders Huckabee went to a restaurant, and the proprietor said, "Leave. I'm not going to serve you." Fascinating. And then, like I said, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi, who, you know, is a mega conservative and I can't even remember, like, some of the policies that she is responsible for, but there's been some hairy stuff. But anyway, she went to go see a viewing of the new documentary about Mr. Rogers and was booed and harassed until she had to leave. What do you think about this trend? This is part of the resistance. People, is this going to continue?
I think that I am super sick of the whole civility debate.
The whole what? Civility.
I don't want to. Okay. The civility debate. Yeah, I'm so over that part of it. So I am against this to the extent that it makes us all talk about civility all the time. But in seriousness, I mean, everyone has a line. There is no black or white answer. Is it ever okay to exclude someone, a public official, from an event because of their stances? Obviously, yes. The question is where that line is, and there is no black and white answer. I mean, once you're, like, literally committing genocide, most people in America would agree it's fine to exclude you from the Red Hen restaurant. But short of that, you know, everyone chooses for themselves. And if people right now believe that, in the case of the Red Hen, the woman talked to her employees and they asked her to have her leave. And if your employees feel uncomfortable with someone because of the way they've acted, the way they, like, demonize some population, you know, I have no objection to that. It could be counterproductive if it from, like, a massive, like, strategy perspective, like if you're, like, trying to, like, what's the best move for Democrats, but that's not what this is. This is individuals making their own call, and that's not a strategy decision. That's just people living up to their own codes, and you know what, the chips fall where they fall, but people have to be true to themselves.
Yeah, and there is a difference between what happened to Sanders Huckabee versus what happened to the others, which is, I mean, there the owner said, "I'm asking you to leave," which, you know, I don't, I mean, legally, I guess she can do that. But in the other cases, it was just like members of the public, which they just ganged up on these people and drove them out of these establishments. Although I'm not going to lie, I feel a certain amount of glee every time I read one of these stories. But I do wonder, I mean, like, it doesn't mean, you know, it can happen to liberals too, right? I mean, it can, like, so what is the end to this? And it's not about civility. It's just about, okay, I mean, like, you know, is this going to be an accepted, like, you know, form of protest on either side of the political sphere? I don't know. On the Miller and Nielsen Mexican thing, I think everybody was like, why the hell you keep going to Mexican? It's interesting you say it's staged. You know what I thought it was? I thought it was maybe their way of saying, see, it was like Trump and that taco bowl. It was like their way of saying, see, we don't really hate Mexicans. We eat Mexican. No.
It was purely, I think it was definitely staged. They knew that that would cause an issue, and they were hoping to get the base sympathy directed towards them for this. And I don't think it worked as well as they hoped it would. I think Sarah Sanders, because it was less, I didn't feel like Sarah Sanders was actually a stunt. She was just going to a restaurant. And for that, she's gotten sympathy. But like, it didn't seem like people were really that outraged on behalf of Miller or Nielsen. They're kind of like, oh, well, okay, stupid liberals, and then moved on. Because I think it's pretty, I mean, nothing about it seemed very deserving of sympathy, and it does seem like a staged act. So I think that's why there's a difference. And as for the end game, there is none. It's just, this is where we are now. And yes, it'll be weaponized both ways. Yes, there'll be occasions where people on the right will be like, okay, well, now we cannot serve liberals because that's what they did. So now we're even Stevens. There isn't a good outcome here, but right. At the same time,
right. That's what I wonder about.
At a certain point, when people start turning into Nazis, people have to decide for themselves how they're going to interact in public with them. And that's where we are.
Well, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, is it Sanders? Anyway, whatever. Huckabee took to her official Twitter account and called out this restaurant, which...
By name. She called it by name.
Yeah, by name. And it was interesting because she's like, I'm too civil to do anything. So I just politely left. But here I am tweeting it out from the official account, probably in the hopes of destroying the restaurant. And they are getting a lot of attacks. So if I'm ever out that way, I'll definitely eat at the Red Hen. I'm sure they're going to get a lot of support, too, on the other side. But that was, Walter Schaub was on Twitter. You know, he's a former ethics guy under the Obama administration. He's like, yep, you violated ethics rule something, XYZ.
He tweets at you. Get him on the show, Rabia.
I got to get him on the show. Not only does he tweet to me, we DM each other, dude.
Oh, my God. Get him on the show. What are you doing?
You know, well, he's at the border right now. But, yes, Walter Schaub, you are in my sights. So yeah, I'm gonna get him on the show. I think when he's back.
For move on, point out that like for all this whole stupid civility debate, the press secretary's father was out treating racist fucking bullshit.
Oh, thank you. Today. Yeah, we forgot about that.
So
he still manages to make his daughter look good.
Well, no, but I guess what the debate like if she can't like if people aren't gonna call out that stuff if that's like what's allowed and defensible in current society, that's the problem here, not the friggin' Red Hen.
Yeah. He, for folks who are not on Twitter, might have missed that, Governor Huckabee tweeted a picture of, it looks like, Latino gang members. I don't know, MS-13 or just general. I don't know. It's kind of a generic photograph. But apparently the photograph actually came from a site managed by this guy who is a hate monger, basically, Robert Spencer. So he takes this image, he tweets it, and he says, this is going to be Nancy Pelosi's new, like this, these are the people that are going to be part of her new, I don't know, some commission or council or something. It was so blatantly racist and yeah, it was pretty disgusting. But it's interesting, you know, I feel like, you know, what Trump has managed to do is like he has given permission to these people who you think might have been racist, but just never kind of like wore it on their sleeves like this to now just completely bare their bigoted souls. That's what's happening. I was kind of shocked to see it. I didn't expect it from him, to be honest.
From Huckabee?
I mean, he's problematic, but I don't think he's ever, has he publicly said like such clearly racist type of things?
This may be more racist than usual for him, but I don't think it was like a secret like, oh my gosh, Huckabee's a racist. Who could have ever seen that coming? I mean, he's not like, what's her face, Ann Coulter. It's not like that level, but.
Ann Coulter did something crazy this week, too. And I just forget. There's been so much crazy. God, she is a horrible human being. What did she say?
Yep.
She said something
no
terrible.
No one cares anymore because she's just terrible and everyone hates her. So
she was on Fox and she said something. I think it was like a direct message to the president. But anyway, I mean, she also has called POTUS out because he's not evil enough. So there's that. I want to talk a little bit about a letter that Trump wrote to Congress this week about North Korea. This is interesting. And I don't get it. I don't know if this is part of a report. I don't know what the point of this letter was. I don't know why it's so soon on the heels of that historic summit. But basically, this is what happened. The letter says it's about North Korea's provocative, destabilizing, and repressive actions continue to constitute unusual and extraordinary threat to the United States. It talks about the country's pursuit of nuclear missile programs. Now, this is, again, a week after Trump said on Twitter there's no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea. He says in his letter that he plans to extend the national emergency with respect to North Korea and the restrictions that come along with having a national emergency. For at least another year, he's going to extend that. I don't know what those restrictions are and what that emergency is about so much, but, you know, it just seems like consistency is not important to this administration, and neither are optics. I mean,
I think it's cleanup. It's emergency cleanup by, like, the, you know, the quote-unquote adults in the room, which don't deserve the title, but they're trying to fix what Trump has done, which is by totally conceding, oh, everything's done, we fixed the whole North Korea problem. They're not like a nuclear threat. We're all friends now. We're all good. That's not helpful to anything.
This is, and he canceled exercises. Ugh. He canceled joint military exercises with South Korea.
So they're putting pressure again the only way they can, which is just through this letter. I mean, Trump himself, his own statements, is not going to do it. So this is their attempt to make Trump be a good negotiator against his own instincts.
So this is somebody in the White House.
Pompeo, probably.
Who's like, we got to do this. I have been reading reports that Pompeo's been increasingly sidelined. So
really?
Let's see how long he lasts.
Everyone's sidelined. I hear that article comes out every single week. Pompeo has been sidelined. Mattis has been sidelined. Bolton has been sidelined. Kelly has been sidelined. They've all been sidelined.
Oh, yeah. Well, on North Korea, Bolton kind of was.
Well, Bolton was, for sure. Thank God.
Yeah, on North Korea. But when it came to Tillerson, those reports were coming out, and actually it ended up kind of happening. I feel like Pompeo doesn't have, like, what is his role? I mean, Trump takes everything into his own hands. Pompeo has absolutely no, that you have Nikki Haley, you know, destroying, you know, UN relationships. Then you have Trump one by one going to this summit, that summit, doing shit. I mean, like, what is Pompeo actually able to even do? How, he cannot damage control. You cannot damage control this president when it comes to international relations. You just can't.
What are your summer travel plans? Now, for me, some folks would like to stay in Washington, D.C. all summer, but every now and then I like to get out of town. You know, for example, I would like to go to Paris or maybe even see Notre Dame or the Eiffel Tower. And if you're like me and you're a big planner, sometimes things don't always go as planned. I tend to always run late for flights. Sometimes flights get delayed or canceled. So for the times when trips don't go as planned, there's AIG Travel Guard. So take, for example, in April, I went down to Florida. I was hoping to meet my girlfriend there, too. And she couldn't make the trip. So it would have actually been better if I had AIG Travel Guard. Travel Guard's staff is available 24/7 to help. And you can get coverage for as low as $30 when you text 45th to 48-48-48. The great thing is, with Travel Guard, if I had to cancel my girlfriend's trip, say if she just could not make the trip or she got sick, Travel Guard would have reimbursed me for the non-refundable flight. And Travel Guard plans work anywhere in the world. Their coverage includes flight and hotel rebooking, flight cancellation, interruption or delay, lost or delayed baggage, medical expenses and evacuation, passport or ticket replacement assistance. So get coverage now for just $30. Text 45th to 484848. That's 45th to 484848. 45TH2484848.
Message and data rates may apply. Please do not text and drive. Insurance offered by Travel Guard Group, Inc. and underwritten by National Union Fire Insurance Company of Pittsburgh, PA. For a complete description of the coverage limitations and exclusions, go to TravelGuard.com. This ad does not describe actual events and is used for illustrative purposes only.
All right, so let's get to the what's been, like, taking up the most space in the news, and rightfully so. And that is just tremendous and tremendous volumes of immigration-related news. It has been, and I'm overwhelmed by it, and it's really been emotional for a lot of people this past week because some of the reports coming out are just really horrible. What we know now is that since Trump instituted his zero-tolerance policy for families arriving at the border, I want to make a little bit of a distinction about what's happening when these families arrive in a second, but nearly 2,500 children have been separated from those families and really shipped all over the country. I mean, like, it seems there are reports I've heard here in Maryland. There's like maybe about a dozen kids that were sent here, Michigan, I mean, like, all over the place. New York, there also were reports that came out this week that Trump has opened up something called tender age centers, which is for, like, really young children, like infants. I think some of the youngest report was a five-month-old, which is just a five-month-old who was being held with two siblings, but they did not know where the parents were, and the parents didn't know what these three siblings were. And what's likely is that those siblings will also, unless a family member, somebody in the country can take all three in, or a foster family can, they'll probably be separated. I read a report that a woman was actually breastfeeding when the baby was taken away from her. I mean, it's really, really the kind of stuff you read about other countries is what I keep thinking. Like, how is this happening here?
Some of those kids will never see their parents again.
A lot of them won't. I think that is fair to say that a lot of these kids. Now, you know, apparently this, I mean, the White House did react by, you know, issuing this executive order, which is complete bullshit. And we'll talk about that in a second. But DHS, another official in DHS said that they actually expect that to double the number, like in the upcoming months, that they think about another 2,500 kids will probably be taken away from their parents. Now, what we have to understand is when we talk about, that's just 2,500, around 2,500 since the implementation of this policy. Before the implementation of this policy, there were other children. Before that, there were other children. We're apparently, there are around 10,000 children in either DHS or HHS custody, immigrant children in this country right now. That's a lot. There are reports in Texas that a tent city is going up to hold families. So what Trump did was issue this executive order saying, okay, I mean, because, you know, there was a massive outcry. Photographs are coming through. Are they in cages? Are they not in cages? What the fuck? I can't believe we're debating whether or not kids behind metal bars are in cages or not. So he issues this completely bullshit executive order where he now says, okay, fine, we're not going to separate them. We're just going to put the families in, we're going to put them all in detention together.
Which is illegal.
Right. But I will say this. It was happening before Trump. Obama did have family detention centers. There was a limit. A court order called Flores limited the amount of days you could keep the kids in with the family. I mean, like, just keep the family there because of the kids with them, 20 days. Trump right now is challenging that. He's going to keep them beyond the 20 days. And so I guess it's, you know, going to happen. But I will say this. Is it better than them being separated from their children? Better for the children, yeah. It's better for the children. If they can be in detention, to be with their parents in detention versus being with strangers. And some of the other reports are that, you know, and I completely get this when you think about, like, protecting children in different ways. I mean, the workers in these detention facilities are not allowed to touch the children or soothe them or hold them and comfort them if they're upset. They're just not allowed to do that. And on one hand, I get it because you don't want to give strange adults access to touching children. But on the other hand, it is completely traumatizing little kids who need to be held and hugged and comforted and taken care of in ways more than just giving them a blanket and food. It's a nightmare. This is a complete and utter nightmare. The Trump administration has set up a hotline, apparently. Call this number for parents who are looking for the kids. Lawyers have called the number. Nobody's picking up the fucking phone. All right.
They weren't planned to reunite the kids. I mean, they didn't even, like, write down who the parents were in some of these cases.
Yeah.
It was not planned ever bringing them back together.
Yeah. There was absolutely not. This is what I kept thinking. There's, and you know, it's not that complicated. You assign some unique numbers, take a photograph of them together, just fucking write it down in a spreadsheet. I mean, the point is, but when the parents and these kids are being separated, they're not tracking any of it. Like, you get a tag when you give your car to a valet, but these parents are getting no, they don't even have documentation to prove that they came in with children. Yeah. They have nothing to show.
And the kids are now classified as unaccompanied minors after they're separated from their parents.
Right. And you have lawyers talking to children who are 3, 4, 5 years old, kids who don't know the language, who can't, maybe don't know their parents' entire name, maybe don't know where they came from. And those kids are, like, having to fight their own battles in terms of applying for asylum. How is a lawyer supposed to talk to, like, a 4-year-old client to put together an asylum claim? It just can't happen. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about how and why these folks are arriving. Now, you would think with these policies in place, it would really deter, because that's what this administration wanted to do. It's clear this was a deterrence method. Kelly said it. Different officials in this administration have said it many times. But it's not deterring folks. People are still arriving from Honduras, El Salvador. These places, you know, I did a lot of asylum work back when I was practicing full time. A lot of asylees come from these places because of ongoing, really, really horrific, just kind of lawless situations, a lot of gang activity, a lot of corruption. The government is unable to protect these folks, and that's actually one of the prongs when you adjudicate an asylum case. And I thought maybe we'll have, at some point, have somebody come on to talk about like in more depth, like, you know, what the process is. But basically, in order to apply for asylum, I can't be sitting in another country and apply for asylum. You just can't do that. I have to either arrive at the border, I have to present myself to an officer at a U.S. port of entry, or I have to be in the country already. You can't get in the country already unless either you cross a border illegally, you get in illegally, or you have a visa. There is no visa available to apply for asylum. So I can't just go to a consulate, let's say in Honduras, and say, hi, I want to go to America and apply for asylum. Can I get a visa for that? Nope, does not exist. So what is happening in many of these cases is these families are arriving at the ports of entry. They're asking for asylum, but this administration is shutting down those entry points. So what they're left to do now is they've walked hundreds of miles, thousands of miles with these little children, is that they're having to cross illegally because they cannot get to a legal port of entry. So that's kind of the situation here. And then they're being immediately detained and separated and on and on and on. And then I don't even know. I have no idea what the processing is going to look like for these asylum claims. It's not going to be in the routine course of business. I know it'll probably be something expedited, which, by the way, did you see Trump's tweet today?
Well, according to Trump, there'll be no process whatsoever. No judges or court cases.
He said, he tweeted today, we cannot allow all of these people to invade our country. When somebody comes in, we must immediately, with no judges or court cases, bring them back from where they came. I mean, the grammar's wrong anyways. Our system is a mockery to good immigration policy and law and order.
Infest, invade, breed. It's Nazi language. Yeah. They're not hiding it anymore. Where we're heading ends well. It's a question of how bad it's going to end. Can we stop the worst from happening?
Yeah. So I know a number of lawyers who are right now who have been at the border, and a couple of them are returning this week. And it's something that if I had the capacity in terms of like my, I didn't have the personal obligations I had to deal with, I definitely would be joining them. But I'm hoping to connect with them this week and find out exactly what's really, really taking place down there. But what I have heard from a couple of friends is like, it's a complete shitstorm. It's a complete and utter shitstorm. Like, lawyers can't find clients. Clients can't find, I mean, like, it's just, it's a huge mess. There are organizations, though, that are doing a lot of work. And you know, a lot of people who are like, what can we do? What can we do? I mean, like, there's a lot of different ways to help. And I would say one of the most important ways is to give to the organizations that are at these, they're already there. They've been doing the work for years. Not hard to find them and support their work. I wanted to talk a little bit about, because I think this is interesting to watch this happen, because I don't know. I will say this. When the Muslim ban stuff happened, I feel like we saw a similar response. We saw a really, really strong response, a strong presence of people like protesting and just like just a real outcry, public outcry. And I feel like we're seeing something similar now with this immigration stuff. So let's talk a little bit about the resistance, some of the things that have happened to push back. There are in every state in the entire country on June 30th, massive protests planned against family separation and detention, every single state in the country. But those protests are already taking place. Apparently last week in Portland, Oregon, protesters shut down an ICE facility, not for long, for a day or so, but they blockaded the ICE garage because they didn't want ICE vans coming and going with children. I have seen today video footage of, I think in Texas, buses full of migrant children being surrounded by protesters. And I have to wonder, like, if my daughter, who was 9, was in one of those buses, I mean, she'd be scared already without her parents. But it would be another level of scary to also see all these, like, people outside yelling and screaming and surrounding the bus because they don't know what's happening. They have no idea these people are there to support them. So I think that's terrifying too. In the last week, we've seen hundreds, if not thousands of people show up at numerous different airports. In fact, a call went out to show up at a whole list of airports. Even though you cannot stop, you know, these children from being transported from here to there because they're just shuttling them on planes and buses and trains and all kinds of ways, at least people can bear witness and they can follow them and they can take video footage. And that is happening. There's photographs emerging, video footage. People are showing up in the middle of the night at like family homes and foster home systems and all kinds of different agencies to try to capture images of the children. And they're moving them around in the middle of the night, like at 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. And if you think about that, when you have a little kid, it's just fucking awful. There's other kind of responses. There are governors now who are refusing to send National Guard troops to the border, which previously they had said they would do in order to, you know, help enforce the border. But we've got about just about five. A couple of Republicans, the rest are Democrats. 10 different states are suing over these family separation policies, and they're going to actually join a lawsuit together. Massachusetts, Washington, California, Maryland, Oregon, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Minnesota. New York is apparently going to file its own lawsuit. A couple of airlines have said that they will no longer, they've asked the administration not to use their flights to carry migrant children, American Airlines and United Airlines. And that apparently was in response to their own employees, like people working those airlines saying, like, we do not want to do this. We cannot deal with this. A number of them have come forward and either written about the experience or interviewed about it, saying that it's been awful because you have like these groups of children who are like all dressed in the same clothing, just like completely dejected and being shuttled around in the middle of the night, and they don't know what to do. They don't want to, you know, have to accommodate ICE. So those two airlines are no longer going to be doing it, apparently.
And this goes back to the Sarah Huckabee Sanders question on the commercial scale. At what point do you stop doing business with government that you believe is being immoral? Because having Huckabee Sanders at a restaurant, that's not just a private person going there. Having her there is an endorsement of the things she's saying, and not in the way that normal democracies function. It's not endorsing a normal, within bounds, political point of view. It's endorsing someone who many see as a liar, who is attacking the public press, and who is endorsing an ethnostate, basically. And what I keep coming back to is, if Trump was someone slightly different, if he was someone who respected the process and understood politics, if he was someone who actually knew how to work within the system to some degree, how far could he take this already? Like, how far along would we be towards an authoritarian state? Because the reason people are objecting, the reason the resistance is acting up now, is fighting back, is because of how clumsy and cold and obvious his actual plans are. It wouldn't have taken much to disguise it. There's plenty of things he could have done that were just as bad as worse, but he could have done it in a way that would have gone unnoticed.
Right. If it was done in the course of
like add Obama's political skills to Trump's authoritarian tendencies, and it's game over.
Right. Which is actually the thing that, you know, people worried about when during the election about, that's what they said about Cruz, that Cruz had it all, right? Like Cruz was the kind of guy, and that was the one thing that people said, well, you know, Trump is, first of all, he won't get elected, but if he was elected, like he actually couldn't even like implement like the
stuff.
Yeah,
but everyone hates Cruz. So Cruz would get less done than Trump does because everyone fucking hates Cruz.
Well, there's
people
that too.
People like Trump.
Apparently they do. So the truth is that most of us are brushing our teeth totally wrong. We're not doing it long enough. We forget to change our brush on time. And that's actually not completely our fault, but it's because a lot of brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks instead of better brushing. But not Quip. So, what makes Quip so different?
Well, for starters, Quip is an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes, while still packing just the right amount of vibrations to help you clean your teeth.
I love Quip. I travel with it a lot just because it's not bulky. But also, they have a built-in timer and it helps clean your teeth for like the dentist recommended 2 minutes. 2 minutes actually can feel like a lifetime when you're doing it, but when you have a timer on, you know you're getting the timing right. And that's what dentists say you gotta use. So Quip has this guiding pulse that reminds you when it's time to switch sides.
Quip also comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror and then sticks to use wherever else. So if you're traveling, no problem. Just take it with you.
Yeah. You know, they have a subscription plan, which is like kind of the important thing for people like me, because I honestly forget. I forget to change the toothbrush heads. It's on like the old electric brushes. But with Quip subscription plans, which are for your health, not just convenience, they deliver new brush heads on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, and that includes free shipping worldwide.
Plus, they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists, and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers use Quip every day. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/45th right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush.
So get your first refill pack for free at getquip.com/45th. Once again, that's getquip.com/45th. This is interesting. And we talked about, being excluded from these spaces like movie theaters and restaurants. church. The church has stepped up. The United Methodist Church, a group of more than 600 clergy and church members, brought church law charges against Attorney General Jeff Sessions over the zero tolerance immigration stuff. So this group, they said that he is violating a clause in the denomination's book of discipline. He's charged under church law. He's actually charged under church law with child abuse, immorality, racial discrimination, and dissemination of doctrines contrary to the standards of doctrine of the United Methodist Church. The letters was addressed to Sessions' pastors. 460 folks signed it, and they're urging a degree of accountability. So I thought that was kind of
that's weird,
remarkable, and wonderful. What did you say?
That's weird.
It's, you know, to me as somebody who
I don't understand church law. I don't understand how that works. Yeah. But from an outsider point of view, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how. At least for most, there's no such real thing as excommunication. Like, we don't really have an excommunication process. But to me, I mean, it's kind of a big deal, I think, for a church, a huge church. I mean, we're talking about a national body.
It's a mainstream one. Exactly. Not like some like little set
to come together.
Like, operating. It's like a pretty bland, if that's the right word, mainstream church is doing.
Well, exactly. Right. These are not like people who jump into like controversial phrase necessarily, and also to do that to a congregation member like so publicly, it's a hell of a humiliation, I would say. And as somebody who is like I have some measure of institutional religious life, I have a feeling. And you know, you've got Sessions running around like citing Bible verses, you know, to.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that.
He deserves it. I think Godwin had a tweet that was like, by all means, call them what they are. I'm with you. Because
yeah, God has a great Twitter account, actually. It's actually called God.
I need to follow him.
But
Godwin.
Oh.
As in Godwin's law.
Yeah. I think it was a really important move, and I'm glad they did it, because their silence on it, it would feel like a silence of the GOP on all this shit. You know what I mean? So I'm... kudos to them. They didn't have to do it. They stuck their neck out, and I'm glad they did it.
It won't matter. But I mean, yeah, it's good they did, because.
Dude, take away Jesus from him is what I say. He doesn't deserve Jesus.
But what they're trying to do right now, it's so clearly focused on creating a white ethnostate. They now feel comfortable. They don't have to hide it. It's not about violence. It's not about drugs. It's. Oh my God, I just had the memory of Trump's signature on the photos of murdered people. And
oh, right. That happened this week too. So like, Trump held, was it at one of these rallies? He had a couple of rallies in the last week, and he called these families together of people whose loved ones had been killed by an undocumented immigrant. And I'm telling you, the numbers here, we're probably talking about a couple of dozen in the country. I mean, like, these are not huge numbers. I mean, all the statistics show that immigrants, documented and undocumented, have much lower crime rates than people who are, like, you know, citizens or permanent residents. And that's one of the reasons why I can tell you, as somebody who represents those kind of folks, is because they don't want to get deported. Even if you have a green card, if you're a permanent resident and you commit a crime, you can be removed for it. You can be put in deportation. So people are in those with that kind of status are very, very careful. So anyhow, he called these families up. These families are holding these blown up pictures of their loved one, deceased loved ones. And then Trump fucking signs the pictures.
I think George W. Bush said it best. That's some weird shit.
I mean... that's, I don't know. Did he talk about ratings? I don't know if he talked about ratings.
He probably did. Anyway. But none of this is about crime, because guess what? They are diverting resources from actual crimes to do these misdemeanor cases, to keep brown people out. They are actually not prosecuting criminals.
Yeah. And thanks for pointing that out. Entering the border without authorization is a misdemeanor. It is not a felony like this family has committed over and over again with all the tax shit and everything else they've done. But speaking of which, so this week we actually don't have any updates on all the felonious shit, do we?
It's coming. It's coming?
Okay. Was Manafort already locked up last week when you and Waj did the episode?
Oh, yeah. Manafort's in jail. He's having, you know, a deep long session with his soul about where he stands on all this.
It seems like there's a little bit of daylight between Cohen and Trump too. I mean, I've been hearing this in the past week, you know, other than apparently Cohen wanted him to, or expected him to pay his legal fees. Cohen's lost his entire legal team. I don't know if he has lawyers right now. He's looking to hire, but he apparently is completely, he's broke from the legal fees. Trump is not stepping up. And Cohen actually criticized, a man like Cohen, as craven as he is, criticized Trump on his the family separation immigration policies, as did, by the way, Laura Bush in editorial, and I think every single living first lady. Melania. Melania,
she doesn't really apparently care.
Was very I don't really care. Oh God, people, we're talking about that picture of this jacket she wore. As she went to visit a detention, she was going to visit a detention center. She actually canceled the visit. She went instead to a shelter. Before she went to the shelter, she got on a plane with a jacket, a Zara jacket, cheaper than probably like the toothpaste she buys. $39.
It's cheap and ugly and like 85 fucking degrees. Of course it was intentional. Yeah. I really think that she cares. Like this is me projecting entirely and making up a narrative in my head. But if I was Melania, I'd be like, okay, y'all, I've been trying to, like, send messages to my Stay outfits. Away. I've been trying to, like, channel my art form
what does
into
it take?
A message. And everyone's like, oh, it's just a fucking jacket. Oh, it's just a fucking dress. Just a fucking, like, hat.
Right.
I'm just going to be all out here and just show y'all what the fuck I'm trying to say now. Because, like, she was not trying to hide anything. Like, she would never have worn that jacket. That was part of the message. Like, she,
no.
She went
She's
out of
model.
Her way.
She wears... Yes. The back of the jacket, folks who haven't seen it, said, I don't really care, do you? Now, like in big white letters.
It's an ugly
the back of this
jacket.
Like army green
and
jacket.
And also, again, it's like 85 degrees out.
Right. She's going to Texas, where it's like 1,000 degrees.
So, yeah, but, she does care. But she cares a lot that you know that she doesn't care.
Exactly. Yeah. So, too bad she's not missing anymore. I guess she's back. All right. So, I guess we'll wrap it up there. It's been a pretty crappy week. I think it's been really depressing. I've been very, very depressed this whole week, last couple of weeks, watching all this stuff unfold. And as of now, actually, by the way, let me also mention that, you know, Nielsen was asked at a press conference, how come we aren't seeing pictures of like the little kids and girls, like not a single picture? Where are all the girls? She said, I don't know. That was the response of the Secretary of DHS is I don't know. They're also in the same week. Reports came out about this officer who worked at a detention center was molesting a four-year-old girl, and threatened the mother that if you report me, I will have you deported. So if we don't know where these kids are, these are the kind of predators who can do whatever the fuck they want with them. And this is like one of the things that's terrifying me right now. Anyway.
And we've now reached, I think, a full week in which there's not been a press conference from the White House.
Right. Right. What are they going to say?
That they aren't going to say anything. They'll just shut down the public outreach and shut down any attempt at transparency.
Everything.
Even like a pseudo attempt.
All right. Well, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Again, June 30th. Take a look online to find out where the protests will be taking place in your state and be there. Show up. All right. Thanks so much. A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.